I think probably that the priorities that we now have in this age, in our age, have to be refined some. And you asked me what was my greatest accomplishment. I believe truthfully that it was raising my children to be kind people. And I hope that they are. They're not here. I don't see it every day on a day-to-day basis. I would hope that my being involved in the community and their fathers being involved in the community would have set the pace for them to take an interest. I see my daughter, who is the only one married, her interests go in her children's schools, and that's okay. I mean, that should be that way. For the time being, that's the most important thing in her life right now. And so that should be. She's not interested in fighting for the UJF or fighting this cause or fighting that cause. And maybe she won't ever be. Maybe I gave, and my husband gave so much of ourselves to that, that it isn't easy. And they live in different vicinities. John's in a Boston a community where he's not the least bit involved with Jewish people. He might be one day, but I doubt it. And he's marrying a non-Jew. And that's even a bigger, I can't tell him, go get involved in Jewish causes when his wife isn't going to convert, and who knows if she even is going to think kindly towards Jews. I'm sure she will, because she's just a nice person, but I don't think she'd want to go run to some Jewish causes the way I would do. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure. I also feel a great deal of accomplishment in the teaching I did. 30 years to teach in the Pittsburgh Public Schools is quite an accomplishment, and I was a good teacher. I loved teaching, and I think that I gave my students everything they could possibly have had in the grades in which I taught. I think my last few years of teaching in a program that I didn't think was particularly great was probably the thing that made me least satisfied with it. That was the Chapter 1 program, and they devastated it when they sent us into the classroom. When we had our own classrooms and we had a grade, we had a half of the grade that was sent to the mainstream teacher, and we were an influence then. It was a much better program. When it became splintered and we had to go into the classroom and we did not give a grade, we just worked with kids who were slow. Well, you make them dummies, and that's what everyone called them. And it isn't a pleasant thing. When they came out, when you pulled them out of the class and they came to us to be taught, they learned because they were on a one-on-one basis. I had an aide in the room, and that was, to me, a much better program. And now the program is really anything you want it to be. Some principals use the money for Chapter 1 to get more aides in the school, or to take their kids on a trip on the riverboat, going down the river, or to go to Kennywood. I mean, it's used as wrongly as it could be used, but that's the way they chose to go with this program, and I personally think it'll probably just filter out. They'll never give up that kind of good money from the federal government, but they'll use it in a different way. So truthfully, those are my, I think, two accomplishments. And maybe being an influence in the Jewish community in the city of Pittsburgh, I felt that I was a needed commodity. I felt that I did a lot for Jews. As I near the end of whatever my life is going to be, I think in terms of was I a benefit to this community? And I think so. I think I did a lot of good. I didn't have the money that I would have loved to have had to make an influence, to be somebody big in the hierarchy of Jewish life. But you can't. You can't have what you can't. You know, you do the best you can with what you have. And those people who are, I think we've had a wonderful legacy of, if you look at our board presidents of UJF, we've had not just well-to-do people, and they have been, because they're not going to get there if they don't have money. You can't give, you can't do if you can't give in that category. And I don't resent that at all. I think that's something that we have to face all through life. And those who have, if they're willing to give, how wonderful. But I think we've had an unusually wonderful group of men and women. Now we have a couple of women who are, you know, who have, Ruth Schachter was, but now Karen Shapira is heading the, is the president. Don't know how that came about, because there were men who, I guess, could have moved in, but maybe they just didn't want to, you know, right now. Maybe that's just one of the things that they felt they couldn't do. But you know that there is a reason for Karen Shapira being up there. She can give. She can give very generously, and she's very hardworking. Mm-hmm. And who should head a group but somebody who has the time to do it and who has the money?
Mm-hmm. How do you view Pittsburgh's Jewish life now, the general community?
I mean, as opposed to something else when I was growing up? Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, it was, to me, a ghetto milieu. And I liked that. That was a cozy, comfortable milieu for me, because I felt my Jewishness, and I was a part of that Jewishness. Hello? This is she. Yes. Yes. What, can I stop you for a minute? I'm in the midst of a very important conversation that I'm doing a taping, and so everything I'm saying is getting tape recorded. So could I just have you call back some other time, please? Okay. Thank you. Uh-huh. Bye. Mothers against. Mothers against drunk driving, and then I feel that very strongly. But I didn't need to have it recorded on the thing. I liked the way the Jewish community was in my early growing up days, because I felt very secure being Jewish, and I was very proud of my Jewishness, and I did not see any reason to, so to speak, branch out. That didn't mean I couldn't contribute to the United Way, and that I couldn't be, and I worked for United Way. And I always did whatever drive went up and down Fair Oak Street, or, you know, in the neighborhood. I was the person who went door to door doing that. And then I had a very bad accident, and I couldn't do that door-to-door thing. And I felt, anyway, it's time to let other people do the cancer drives and the muscular dystrophy and the multiple sclerosis and all those drives that go on in your neighborhood. I'm sure you get plagued with it. And I think sometimes they need to call other people, not just the same person. Once you do one thing, they get you for everything. Me, that's you on your street. Well, I know, because I know what it was like for me. And I like that. I mean, I like being a part of that. Now I have the feeling that because of my sorority affiliation, my husband's fraternity affiliation, and that all of our friends remained here. My husband's probably one of the few who came from out of town. He was from Laurelton, Long Island, and that happened very little. Now, everybody's kids go away to college and never come back. If they do come back, it's because their father has a business and they go into it here. Or very rarely do they come back, because there isn't a lot of industry in Pittsburgh. we've lost a great deal that we had. And so your families are spread. And because they're spread, there's not that cohesive Jewish feeling that there was before. Because if you took a poll of all of my friends and my husband's friends, you'd find they were all Jews affiliated with Pittsburgh and in either our fraternity or our sorority or our temple. That's where we made our friends. Well, our children don't do that now. At least my children haven't. They've moved away, and one is marrying a non-Jew. So how should I think about my Jewish community when obviously my son didn't get something even in my home? And I shouldn't really say that. He did affiliate with a Jewish girl, and that didn't work. So he's thinking, oh, well, see, I tried that, Mom, and it wasn't something that worked. And their world is so different from ours here. Yes, I liked the way it was before, and I liked knowing that my high school and college friends, by and large, were going to stay right here, and they're still my friends, and we still do things together. But very few of them are from out of town. They're almost all here, where all of my son's friends, I don't think a living one of them is a Boston-born person. Mm-hmm. And he certainly wasn't. And his future wife is not going to be. She's from Lake Jackson, Texas. So I hope I answered your question to let you realize that I've grown in my thinking about the non-Jewish world. Yes, I have friends who are non-Jews. And I see them. You know, I mean, they're not my closest friends, but if I were to have a party, I would include them and there are many blacks in that group. So that's something. But my thinking about religion has had to grow because what am I going to do? How can I fight this whole thing? In my own way, I have to practice my Judaism by regularly attending my temple. And if you say, do you really get anything out of it? Yes, I have a peaceful hour and a half every Saturday morning that I go. I miss it. When I'm going to be up in Boston on Saturday the 16th, I will miss being at services. And I went to the symphony Friday night, and I missed that 45 minutes that I spend there. It's a letting down. After the day's work, I'm at 4 o'clock, I'm racing over there to be there at 5, and I'm at peace. I feel very close to Vig in that particular surrounding because that was his world, and he loved it so. He was a true Jew and a real Renaissance man, and he loved his Judaism. He truly did, and I do. And I feel I'm surrounded and happy with people who are Jewish. And I don't mind that. That, for me, is very good. I'm not sure I'm as comfortable or will be when I go to John's World, for instance, in a couple of weeks to go up to Boston for his engagement party at a friend's home when there's not another living Jew there. There are no Jews that I know of who are going to be at that party, but my daughter and son-in-law and two children, and my two grandchildren. That bothers me. It bothers me because I'm not used to that. And so even though I'm very poised and I don't get shy or frightened about things, I won't be as much at ease. Now, I'm gregarious, and so I'll take to his friends very easily. But I keep saying to myself, but I'm much more comfortable in my Jewish world.
I have a question. Will you tell that about you?
But I'm not as comfortable. Let's see. Will he know it? I think he will. I think he would know. He knows his mother as being just a gregarious million friends. You know, they say there's nobody who has as many friends, and a lot of people do say that. You know, my friends say, oh my God, you'll never be lonely. Look how many friends you have. Well, the truth of the matter is, it doesn't matter how many friends you have. You are lonely for the mind that Victor had, and that I could sit and talk about anything with him. And it's very comforting to have somebody who grew up with you and knew everything that affected you and how you felt about things, and you discussed always whether you liked this movie or you didn't like that movie and why didn't you like that movie and that kind of thing. He's perceptive, and he might say, oh, my mom's gregarious, she gets along with everyone, and I do, and I take easily to young people. I've always got something I can question them about. I'll find out more about you in 10 minutes than you would have ever imagined you would reveal, because I'll ask the questions, that's all. I just say, well, what do you do? What's your dad do? What's your mom do? Those kind of things. So he might not see, and he was anxious for me to have the day to spend with my grandchildren, because he didn't want me to be tied up with them up on the third floor of this house where the party is going to be, and he wanted me to meet his friends. And I know a lot of his friends, and a few that are Kelly's friends I don't know, but I'm easily able to adapt. So will he say, gee, my mom would be more comfortable if she was among Jews? No. He won't say that, and he won't even think that. I'm telling that to you because I know the way I feel. Mm-hmm. I'd far rather be back here mm-hmm. with my friends who are all Jewish, or mostly Jewish, because they know me. They understand the things I might say or the little Yiddish expression I might come out with. And I'm not big into that. I don't know a lot of Yiddish. My mother never spoke those things. But one or two things she might say. Oh, God. It's Ochenvei, you know, something like that. Meaning, oh, God, it's going to be terrible. It's for the bad side of things. Well, that's an expression. Well, they wouldn't understand that at all. They wouldn't have the vaguest idea what I'm talking about. And another thing, too, Angela, they wouldn't have a concept of how difficult it is for me to have said, John, you're going to do what you want to do anyway. So you want to get married. It's your happiness that's most important. And if you're going to raise your children to be good, honest, kind people, what else can I ask, you know, than that? Now, what I could ask is that they be Jews. Mm-hmm. But I can't get that. Mm-hmm. And that makes me very unhappy, yes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know any other way to express it. He understands that. He knows I'm not thrilled mm-hmm. with the whole thing. Not that I'm not thrilled with Kelly. And how do I know if I'm thrilled with Kelly? When do I see her? You know, how much do I have contact with her? I talk to my son on the phone. I don't talk to her. She's not at home when he's calling me. If he's calling me on his 800 number, he's at work. So she's not there. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know anything. And do I feel that closeness? How can I? She is bucking the one and only thing that I think would be very completing. It's to raise your children in one religion. Mm-hmm. And of course I'd want that religion to be Jewish, because I think I have a very good religion. I think the religion is a sound religion. I don't think Catholicism is. Well, that's my opinion. But she does. I mean, she's only been raised as a Catholic. Now, she hasn't done very much with it since then. And maybe once she has children, if God is willing, you know, if she's able to have them, maybe she will grow to see the benefits of, if John is forceful and really joins a temple and takes his children to Sunday school. Otherwise, you can forget it. They are not going to be Jewish at all. And that's, to me, a very sad thing. And that's where I've expressed to John, and he knows how I feel. And I guess he thought I was going to buck the whole thing. And I did at first. You know, I just said, isn't there any way that you can persuade her that you can't raise children in two religions, especially Catholic and Jewish? It's such a dichotomy. But once I saw, there's nothing I can do, absolutely nothing, except to lose a child. And I don't know that I'd have done that. You see, John, I wouldn't have lost a child. I think John might have just said, well, then my mother is just going to never talk to me, or some such thing. Well, how awful.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a Jewish son-in-law, and I don't really get along with him at all. So, why hold out?
Well, Mina, we're just about at the end.
Yes.
And this has been delightful.
Aw, how it's nice really of you to say that.
Wonderful. Tonight was my favorite.
Aw. Why?
Well, let's finish up, and then I'll tell you. Is there anything that you would like to add or cover that we've not talked about yet?
I think your questions were quite insightful, and I think you asked the kinds of things that would give you a picture of what it was like growing up in Oakland in my early life. I probably could talk volumes about the way it was in those days, but I suppose we don't have time to do all of that.
We talk a lot about the way it was. Well, tell me more about the way it was then. We have a little bit of tape.
I guess maybe I liked it so much. It was such a happy upbringing. My family didn't have money at all, and we lived in an apartment on McKee Place, and it wasn't that kind of world. I never believed in country clubs or city clubs. I didn't crave that. I didn't know really so much about its existence or care about it, because I had happiness being a Jew in a world, in a community that wasn't all Jewish, but the Jewishness was in its own little secure cubbyhole, and I never doubted for a minute my Jewishness, and yet I was like a queen among the blacks, because I was so friendly and cheerleading and, you know, all of the things that I did in school, editor of the school newspaper, all of the things that they looked up to, all the kids looked up to. So I felt like, what a wonderful world. I didn't know anything bad was happening until, of course, you know, I faced the fact of what was happening to Jews all over the world. But in my little world, that was such a beautiful way to grow up. And it led me into the bigger Jewish community, where I could be a part of everything and still feel that security and still branch out and have other friends, a great many black friends who were of a higher quality that, you know, that would keep you there in the same milieu that you had been in, and to have all the culture that Pittsburgh offered, because I do think that we're unique in that respect because of our ballet and our opera and our symphony, that we have just as much almost as you have in New York, and then to have had the unique opportunity to be married to a man as wonderful as Victor was, and have traveled all over the world and seen so many different cultures, and to get to New York as often as we did because his family was from New York, but still have a Pittsburgh to come back to, because we both loved Pittsburgh, and he wasn't from Pittsburgh, but loved it to the core. And how wonderful, how lucky I am to have all of that. I marvel each day. And I think I told you what Victor once said to his friends and to a lot of people and to his children too, that he knows that the angel of death, didn't I tell you this? He knew that the angel of death was going to visit each of us. Sooner or later, we were going to die. But he would go with the angel of death, a happy man, because he had seen more and done more and accomplished more than he ever dreamed possible. And he said it for me, too, that the two of us together had done all of this, and we did so much more than in our early lives neither one of us ever would have dreamt possible, that we would be as involved in the Jewish community or involved in the world, so to speak, or seen the world as we did, and to do it on our own. Nobody gave us anything. We did it on our own, each of us holding two jobs down, in some instances three. You know, at some times, I was teaching in the public schools. I was teaching at Temple for 25 years, and both Saturday and Sunday mornings, and tutoring. So you could say three complete jobs that gave me an income that I used to do all the things that we did. So my thoughts are that how wonderful, how lucky I am. And as Vic said, I know I don't want the angel of death to come, because, and I truly believe Victor did. I don't think he minded. He did not mind. He felt that he had done so much. Yes, I think he would have wanted to live longer to see his two grandchildren develop and to see his son married and have children of his own. And I'd hope that that would happen. And we thought it would happen with Victor's mother lived to 89. His father died later than he did. And we thought that was early, 72 his father was. Victor was only 70 and a half. But who knows? I mean, how do we know what life has in store for us? My father died at 57. In those days, that was in 1957. He died at the age of 57. And my mother lived to 85. And she had emphysema and smoked, you know, until she had to give it up. And I do nothing. I don't drink or smoke or any of that thing. It never has enthused me. And so who knows what life has in store. But if it has anything in store for me, I'd certainly like to live to see these grandchildren that are now here at 7 and a half and 4 and a half develop into human beings that are, you know, that are wonderful, and I'm sure they will be. They're lovely children, and to see my son married and raise children also. And if they're not Jewish children, what should I do? There.
Well, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been enlightening.